Hey everyone, welcome back to the Topsoil Podcast. This is another episode of the Friday Fire. Here at the Soil Nation World Headquarters. My name is Mitchell Hora, joined with Trent Stout, Stout Seeds, and my company is Continuum Ag. So a couple quick topics here today to wrap up a huge week. Thanks again to Delaney Howell from Market to Market and Ag News Daily for joining us this week. Huge feedback on her, huge response from our listeners. So thanks everyone for tuning in on that. And we hope to get a lot more, even bigger and badder people.
I don't know if you can get bigger and badder. I mean,
Delaney
was
pretty awesome.
Solid.
Yeah, she was good. So we'll keep in touch with her too and keep passing along things that she's involved with, and hopefully we can get her back down here too. So, but more guests and whatnot to come though too. We're getting a plan put together for throughout the summer and throughout the spring here. So, but a couple things we want to talk on today. So getting some feedback from people about a couple things. So Trent, wanted to get your thoughts first. I had a guy from Western Iowa, was at an event I was at, and he was emailing me here the last day about trying to get more diversity in his cover crops. He's in a corn-on-corn program.
And that's because he needs feed?
I'm not for sure. I don't know if they're chopping some off. Maybe speak to that a little bit if you're chopping corn or if you're taking it all to grain. Right now they've been experimenting with some variety of seed a little bit, but trying to find some cheap options that will actually get some value for them. They're flying things on, they're putting it on with a dry spreader and looking at maybe getting things on earlier, a V5 or around that time. Mm-hmm. What's your kind of thoughts there? You know, how do we get more diversity into a monoculture kind of program and something going?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. Most guys who are in continuous corn environments are typically because they need corn because they're feeding all their corn, right? So it's hard when you have a guy that's in a monoculture like that to come and say, I want to really build on diversity when you only are planting one crop to begin with. I mean, most guys were struggling with trying to build on diversity when they're in a rotation of two crops, and we're saying we're trying to get you to three crops. Yeah. And so it's a challenge. It's not like it's not possible. Okay. So like the biggest question I would have is if you're chopping corn, right? Like if you're doing some silage, that's your opportunity to really, depending on how many acres you're doing, to start building on that rotation.
Because there you've got more time to get it in because you're taking that corn off earlier. Now you've got more of a growing season while it's still warm for that crop to get going. But yeah, so in that situation, what are some of the main things you would want to hit on if you were getting stuff planted in August?
Yeah, so the biggest thing that we learned from Ray Archuleta at the Soil Health Academy was the research is showing if you're looking to jumpstart your system and start building soil organic matter and farming carbon, then you need at a minimum of six species. Like we used to think, boy, man, if we could get oats, rye, and crimson clover, we were really, we were gunk. That boy, we really killed it.
We used to think that, yeah, like 3 months ago.
Right. So now it becomes a balance of like, how do I get as many species as I can? And understanding the function of those species. Like if you're in continuous corn, you need to be going after nitrogen. You need to be going after things with low C to N ratios, as far as what's going to come out over winter. I think oats is going to be key from the mycorrhizae perspective, because when you're in those monoculture continuous corns, you tend to have this issue of like you don't have that mycorrhizae fungi where you want it to be to be able to get the nutrients from the soil. So I think oats have been shown to be really good there. I think hairy vetch would be a key. I think that you would kind of build around those. You'd start adding more legumes for the nitrogen fixation if you can get some good legumes in there. Winter peas, so you want a balance of things that are going to die off winter kill wise. Those are going to probably be like your oats, your and then keep your grasses to a minimum of what's coming over winter.
Because you've got the carbon already and you're planting corn is already a grass.
Right. So you're just trying to feed things that are going to be you're trying to feed your microbes from the legumes and the brassicas and having that be more of the dominant species. And then your grasses that you need, you're looking for things that maybe if you have, we don't get annual ryegrass to overwinter very well here. Like, so that might be an application there. But oats, I think, is key. You know, I think we're learning more and more and more about oats, and everything that we keep kind of pulling back and uncovering, it seems to be like really promising. But the question is, after corn harvest, you don't have any time for oats. So like oats in a silage, sweet corn, those type of applications, I like that more and more every day.
Yeah. I definitely agree there. So, okay, part of the issue here is on cost. So we're throwing out a lot of different things there. Where does cost become an issue? And obviously, though, I mean, part of to factor into that is you're getting a nitrogen credit here that should be where you can move some of the funding that you were putting towards chemical fertilizer, nitrogen fertilizer, to putting in seed. What's your...
Well, I don't... What I've learned in cost, when it comes to cost... Just because you're adding more diverse species does not mean that your cost is going up. It's when you start adding exotic things that are one-offs. You know, like there's been a lot of momentum around like Phacelia. You know, Phacelia is not a stocked product in most co-ops. You know what I mean? Like that's kind of a specialty product. So if a guy has to order in 50 pounds of Phacelia to put 20 pounds in your mix, the cost becomes kind of exponential. But if you're just adding, there's a lot you can do within pretty stocked clovers, you know, winter peas, hairy vetch, those type of things are pretty well stocked with cover crop suppliers anymore. So I think every time you add something, you're taking seed rates down, and arguably a lot of the recommended seed rates are way too high to begin with. So you can stay within that $15 to $20 an acre and have a lot of species. You're not going to have a ton of one, but you're going to have a lot of different
species. Good diversity that you can go off of, that you can still get some options out there.
Well, yeah, and your seeds per square foot stay about the same too. You know, that's typically like oats and these type of things that are more commodity type products that are pretty cheap. They're cheap because they're sort of, I don't know how to put that into words.
Well, they're widely available.
Like clover, you get so many more seeds per pound than you do in oats. Mm. So like clover costs more, right? But you're not using as much.
4 pounds or something like that for a bushel, right?
Right. So you're 32 pounds. So you're not using as much to get the same amount of seed counts. Mm. So like your costs are always relatively about the same.
Yeah.
It just, if it's about when you're looking at it from a bulk perspective, clover, you're getting so many more seeds per pound than you are of oats. And so the cost per pound is disproportionate, but the cost per seed, if you wanted to break it down per seed, all that stuff is relatively close. So it's just about how many seeds per square foot you're going after, and then, you know, tailoring your pounds to be the right percentages for yourself. And then, it'll be about that same rate. Like putting on a bushel of rye is about $10 per acre, you know, seed cost, right? Mm-hmm. Like that's a pretty arbitrary number, but for most areas, you know, a bushel of rye is somewhere around 10 bucks an acre at a bushel, at a seed rate. But if you start taking 24 pounds of rye and mixing it with a half a pound of red clover and a half a pound of crimson clover and a, you know, 3 pounds of vetch and 5 pounds of peas, you're going to come out to around about 10 to 15 pounds per acre, you know?
Yeah, so, I mean, 10 to 15 bucks.
Right. 10 to 15 bucks per acre. So, I mean, it's, you can get their cost. I'm not saying it should be cost prohibitive. I don't think it's cost prohibitive. I think that if you did it smart and you did it with someone who knew how to design some of these to meet your goals, you can put together a pretty good mix pretty economically for what you're spending for a monoculture's cover crop.
Those things you're talking about there, can we get some of them on at V5 into a growing
crop? So, I mean, we had Michael Vito. He has a...
Doing his interseeding.
Yeah, and he has, what is it, cubicle farm refugee.
Yeah, cubicle farm refugee.
blogspot.com. He does as good a job as anybody laying it out there. Flolo Farms with Lauren Steinlog out of West Union does as good a job as anybody. And I think he just had an article in John Deere's magazine, where that laid it out pretty good what he's doing. So there are better guys. I mean, interseeding is somewhat new. Oh, I can't forget Chris Teachow. You know, Chris Teachow is doing a ton of stuff too. Kind of the king of interseeding downs in southern Iowa. So those guys, I think, do a good job of, if you're looking to interseed at V5, those guys have as good of experience as what I would. You know, I'm kind of secondhand nature to that. But again, I mean, you need shade tolerant things. We've tried everything. Annual ryegrass tends to do a little bit better. Cereal rye doesn't do very well. You know, oats. I mean, it's just understanding the interseed thing is so much of an art form than it is a science. You know, it's just those guys that are doing that and doing it well they're the painter behind the painting. You know what I mean? Like it's all about the art form of that. So is it possible? Yeah, it's definitely possible. I know in our experience, Nebraska's did better than what we thought they would do. So if you were looking to come in afterwards to graze, you know, for this specific situation, you know, there's some things that you can do. I know the clovers didn't do as well as we thought they would do, but it could be the year. There's just so many variables there.
Yeah, for sure.
But so one of the big things that we've run into recently is, and you do a ton of soil samples. Yeah. So, I mean, one of the things that we're running into is these companies that want to sell, you know, mechanical or robot soil samples, right? Like this is, you know, it's becoming commoditized. And part of it's because there's probably a business there, you know, not necessarily probably a get rich quick scheme pulling soil samples, you know, on grids, but it's labor intensive. Mm-hmm. Like it's not something that everybody in the world wants to do. And so, of course, as we do, we create technology to fill that void.
Oh, yeah.
So what should we be concerned about? Like if this becomes the kind of the next thing where you start seeing a lot of this marketing going into robotic soil samplers,
yeah.
What do we need to know about that? What are your concerns? I'm curious.
Yeah. No, so this came up today, I guess. So shout out to Joe Nestor and Clint Nestor of Nestor Ag on this one. They're right in the middle of this deal on their independent consulting company trying to go out and pull soil samples on zones and help make fertility recommendations. And the guys that they're working with, they're trying to get as a client, are saying, hey, we've already got this figured out to pull soil samples using this robot from this whatever company. I don't know who it is. And these guys are saying, well, that robot is not going to get you the precision, the consistency, it's not staying up to the integrity that we have as independent consultants to go out there and pull a good sample. So they're going head to head and getting after it. So for me, I pull everything by hand with a hand probe. We use a foot probe when we have to. Things are hard, you know, if the ground gets really hard, we can't get it down with a hand probe. But the whole point there is to get a really consistent sample that doesn't have residue in it, that is at the same depth. That is, I take them throughout the row as well. You want to be consistent of the area or consistent for what are you trying to learn. So we do a lot of the soil health tests, you know. So we want to see with the Haney test, working with Dr. Haney, we want to see what nutrients are available to the plant. So we're taking a look at what is in that root zone, what is the plant seeing. And we want to make sure that we're not getting in residue and whatnot that throws things off, because the nutrients in that residue will become available at some time, but they're not available right now. We want to make sure that that is not getting into the sample. It throws things off and it causes inaccuracies in our variables or in our results. And when we're utilizing soil sample results to make thousands and tens of thousands of dollars worth of monetary decisions for fertilizer on it, every single farm, that adds up if you're doing things in not a very good manner. So for us, I mean, we want to be out there in the field pulling samples, and when we're utilizing zones, we're able to do that extremely economically. We're getting very representative area of the field, and we are taking a soil sample catered to how we're actually going to be able to use it. and how the grower is going to be able to utilize that soil sample. So it's getting as intense as we need for what the grower is actually going to be able to do. So have had plenty of people hitting me up and stuff on about, you know, utilizing these robots or utilizing other technology or utilizing like rigs that you can put on a four-wheeler or a gator or your truck or a tractor and all this stuff to pull samples. And some of them are, I'm sure they're fine or whatever. Maybe they're okay, but I don't think you can keep up with the integrity that a good consultant has or a good agronomist has to go out there and get samples pulled. So that's my thought on it. Plus the other thing for us is we're pulling soil samples mostly when there's a growing crop. We're pulling soil samples in the year because that's when we care about what nutrients are actually available to the crop, is when the crop actually needs nutrients. I don't care. It's interesting to see what's available, you know, here in early April or March, or we're pulling soil samples all year round. So looking at what's available in December and January and November and everything is really cool, but I really care about what's available at V5, V6 when I'm determining ear size and determining the number of ovules that my plant is going to try to put on. And so I really care about it then. I really care about nutrient availability going into reproduction. And, you know, so July and August is when nutrient availability really matters. But we need to get a better understanding of how nutrients come available throughout the year leading up to that point. And so that's why we focus on pulling samples in the season. It's hot. There's other things going on. It's not necessarily the easiest thing to do at that time, but that's when we can get really good results. And now we've got soil testing mechanisms and soil tests. Like I said, the Haney test, to be able to give us a good look at what is actually available at that snapshot in time for the plant. And we want to make sure that we are being extremely accurate in our way of pulling soil samples to look at what is available to that plant. So it'll be interesting to see what those guys find out and what the results look like from their hand-pulled samples compared to utilizing a robot. And it's great to utilize technology. The thing that's going to happen is we're going to be analyzing soil nutrients and soil data on the go. You know, that's what's going to happen, like with the smart firmers and those kind of tools. And there's more coming that we're going to be evaluating soil parameters, soil nutrients on the fly and making nutrient recs on the fly. Those technologies aren't quite here yet, but they're definitely coming. In order to be able to take a snapshot in the season of what's available right now and make a nutrient application within milliseconds, that takes a lot of research because we need to know what nutrients already came available, what nutrients have already been used, what nutrients have been lost, and what nutrients are still going to come and mineralize throughout the year. That's an easy thing to look at when you look at the soil as a mathematical equation and a chemical equation. But when you're looking at biology and soil health in a dynamic system, that changes the game. And things fluctuate and change all the time. And that's why we still got a lot of work to do to figure that out, on how our soil parameters and soil nutrient availability changing as driven by our management practices, products that we're applying, stabilizers, biologicals, new fertilizer products. They're changing nutrient availability. Weather is driving the soil biology, and the soil biology is what's driving those processes to work. And we got to get a better understanding of that. And that's where I think it takes agronomic knowledge and being out in the field, seeing what's going on. That's where agronomists and consultants are going to have a key role continuing into the future. So that's kind of my rant on that, I guess, for today. And we'll follow up on that later, I suppose. So some good stuff here the first 5 weeks. Thanks, everyone, for tuning in and for all the support. For sure, we've got a lot that we've learned and a lot that we're going to keep learning and doing this and keep improving our podcast and whatnot. But appreciate all the support and keep throwing us ideas and things that we're going to keep on talking about. So until next time, thanks, everyone, for tuning in. Well,
you just laughed it off. It was all okay.